And a good Saturday morning to you. This morning I am joined from the University of Minnesota, Julie Weisenhorn. Julie, good morning.
Yeah, hey, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well and I don't usually get excited about a lot of snow when I have to drive. But when I've looked at my shrubs and my lawn and the trees and all the conversations you and I and our colleagues have had, this is a great sign for, and it looks like a pretty good moisture content to this stuff too.
Yeah, I've definitely seen benefits already just looking out my window here at the foodscape. I'm coming to you from the Arboretum today and already seeing greening up and moisture in the soil, and that's so important right now.
Oh, it really is. So it's a blessing. It really is. And we're expecting, as I mentioned, as I heard Al just say, it goes anywhere from 3 to 10 inches, basically, is what the folks are saying. But we'll keep our eyes on that. Now, if you have any kind of a lawn or garden question for Julie, and you know, you're a regular listener of the show, you know how busy we get. So let's hear from you earlier, sooner rather than later. You can call in, you can text in, which is easier. 651-461-9226. Boom, all of a sudden we're getting texts as we speak here. Let's grab this first one. Texter says, I bought a wandering dude plant last week mostly because I thought the name was cool. how do I care for it? Thanks. That comes from Christopher in Mound. Hi, Julie. What do you think? Wandering dude, is that for real?
Well, I've never heard it called that before, but I know Chris, and it's a really easy plant to care for. It's actually, the genus is Tradescantia, and it's a very prolific vining plant. It usually, there's a variety of different colored leaves, and a lot of the common ones I've seen have been like a purpley color, maybe a burgundy color, and these just need to be kind of in a medium light. They actually grow down, I've seen them growing in Florida as ground covers, and so they don't need a lot of light. So that's a great feature of a house plant, because light is one of our biggest challenges in our homes for plants.
Absolutely, and I'm thinking maybe the name of that plant is to honor the Coen brothers. You know, the dude. Possibly, I don't know. Hey, let's grab a phone call. From Mark. Mark's calling in this morning from Shoreview. Hi, Mark. What is your question for Julie?
Yes, good morning. About a Carl Forster plant. I went to cut them down a week ago, and I put my hand around one of them and lifted, and the whole plant just lifted out from the ground, and I'm in the hole where it was. I couldn't even see any roots or, you know, the bottoms of the stalks. And it was just one plant out of five that this happened to. I'm wondering what could have happened and how to prevent it.
So it has no more roots left.
That I could see, right? I didn't dig in, but okay. Nothing that I could see at soil level.
Okay. So if a plant has lost its roots, that means that something has eaten those roots and the plant is essentially dead at that point. Whether it was, what kind of critter it was, it could have been grubs, it could have been voles. Living down underneath that plant. They do like to spend the winter in kind of grassy areas. Carl Forster's a great plant, and you shouldn't have any trouble replacing that plant. But there's not much to do about changing that, except for maybe look in the soil as it warms up and see if you do have grubs. Pay attention to see if you have any small animals that are living in those plants as well. And check the other plants for sure. So in this case, I think I would just replant it and kind of chalk it up to experience. But there's nothing to do to prevent that.
Okay. For just joining us, Julie Weisenhorn from the U of M is answering those lawn and garden questions on our Smart Garden Show today. 651-461-9226. Here is another one, Julie. Texter says, my son has a wide stream on his property close to his house. His yard has large piles of dirt like an animal has been digging. What animal do you think that could be, and how does he remedy this?
Large piles of dirt that an animal has been digging. Boy, my first thought is woodchucks. Hmm. They're big. They do some digging. But that, boy, I don't know. That would be a great question for a wildlife specialist. And maybe contact the DNR. They have excellent wildlife specialists who can maybe help you with identifying that animal. I'm hoping this is just out of curiosity and it hasn't been doing any damage in the area.
Because usually, Julie, correct me if I'm wrong, but moles usually kind of have the raising of the soil or sod.
Yeah, but not really piles of dirt.
Yeah,
big piles to me means they've been kicking up and really burrowing in. So I would think it's a larger animal than a mole.
Well, as you know, we have some of the smartest listeners around, and I would bet, that we're going to have we'll have some comments on some people who some listeners who know what that critter might be. All right, another one. My tulips are up. This is the first year I've ever planted tulip bulbs. And Dexter says, and now we're supposed to get 11 inches of snow. Do I cover them?
No, at this point, there's not much to do about that. The snow will actually help insulate those tulips. What you're mostly concerned is if the temperature drops really low, like sub-zero, and the tulips are not covered up. So that snow is actually insulating them. They'll be fine. They might see a little bit of damage on the tips of the leaves, but this not covered up. So that snow is actually insulating them. They'll be fine. They might see a little bit of damage on the tips of the leaves, but this snow is going to melt really fast. It's going to be in the 40s, you know, a couple of days after the snowfall.
I'm looking at the forecast, and unlike a lot of storms after, you know, so many times, Julie, as you know, after we get snow, it turns cold, usually.
Right, right.
Often. Not you're right on the money, because I think Monday we'll get up to near 40. Let's see, I'm just glancing at this. High 30 Wednesday.
Yeah, 38
Thursday.
Are pretty low.
Friday, 45 the high. So, yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of melting going on. 21 is our current temp. All right. Garden, lawn or garden question. 651-461-9226. Let's grab another one. Hi, gang. This one says, good morning. Are banana peels bad for composting? I've heard different views. What's yours?
I don't know of anything bad about banana peels in your composting. If you're really anxious to get them to break down quicker, you could like cut them into thirds so that they're smaller pieces they could break down. But I don't think they're going to cause any issues in your compost.
As you know, Julie, we get a lot of questions, it seems like pretty often, about coffee grounds for use in gardening. What do you and your other experts say about that?
Well, I think the one thing about coffee grounds is that they add a lot of lightness to soil. So if you have very compacted soil, they can help to break that down. They're great to throw in compost. No problems there. To grow something directly in coffee grounds would not be a good idea because they don't provide any kind of nutrients to the plant. But they do lighten the soil, and they make it kind of friable or friable. And so that's so that is a good addition to your compost. We have a nice webpage, actually, that my friend Ann Sawyer, who used to work for Extension, wrote. It is called Coffee Grounds, Eggshells, and Epsom Salts in the Home Garden. So these are this is a great webpage. It's under our soil webpage on Yard and Garden. So extension.umn.edu. Go to Yard and Garden and visit Managing Soil and Nutrients in Yards and Gardens. And you will find the link to that article. So if you've wondered about those ingredients in your home garden, this is a great place to go.
I'm glad you mentioned it. We always like to do that on this show. Extension.umn.edu. What a great resource. Julie, hang on. We're going to grab a phone call from Deb when we come back and answer more text questions as well. This is our Smart Garden Show. You have a lawn or garden question? Here's the number to either call in or text in. 651-461-9226. From News Talk 830, this is WCCO. And good Saturday morning to you. Welcome back to this portion of our Smart Garden Show. Julie Weisenhorn from the U of M answering those lawn and garden questions this morning. You tell me, Julie, you're right there at the Arboretum.
I am at the Arboretum today, which is why I probably sound a little different. But yeah, so I am here today because right after this radio show, I am teaching a class called Jumpstart Your Garden.
Mm.
And I need to be across the street at the Bee Center.
So you're nearby.
Yes.
We'll talk about the Arboretum in just a matter of minutes. We always like to do that. But we have a ton of listener questions by phone and by text. Let's grab the first one. Deb, calling in from Chanhassen this morning. Hi, Deb. What's your question for Julie?
Good morning. We took down some evergreen trees last fall. And, of course, the lawn underneath is non-existent. What do we do? We want to put grass there. Number one, what type of grass, and how do we need to prep the soil?
Okay. So you've taken down some evergreen trees, so now you have full sun, and the soil has been – have you taken out the stumps? Deb, did you take out the stumps of your trees?
Yes. There are some trees there, so it's not full sun. It's more of a dappled sun a little
bit. All right. So you've taken out the stumps, so now you want to decide on the best grass species for that area. So you want to look at the amount of light that you have. So you said you have dappled light, so that's great. And you probably have pretty dry conditions right there. So you're going to want to take out any kind of, if there's any sort of growth, like grass growing or weeds or anything, you want to take those out in the area that you're going to reseed. And then get that seed down. You could put it down anytime and get a jump on that. We call it frost seeding. If John were here, he would really promote this. This is a great way to get a start on your grasses, on your lawns for the gardening season. And the cold, damp weather is going to help to germinate, help those seeds to germinate. So they will start to fill in. And then you want to just be sure that you keep those plants watered. So you don't want those little grass seedlings to dry out. So keep them watered. And it should grow in really nicely. It's good that you're thinking about this right now. Now, if you did not get all of the roots out, which is can be difficult to do, particularly if they're really large trees, you may see some mushrooms coming up here and there, and those are growing out of the roots that are left in the ground that are decomposing. So you just knock them down. There's nothing to treat with, nothing to do about it. It's just going to happen. Just knock those down, pick them up, throw them in your compost, and just kind of keep caring for that area while that grass fills in.
All right, we're getting responses like we figured we would on the piles of dirt, soil.
Oh, good. Awesome.
Some folks say gophers. Some folks say badgers. Sounds like a football game between Wisconsin and Minnesota.
But, the little brown jug.
Yeah, exactly. Let's grab another phone call. Harold is calling in from Roseau, Minnesota this morning. Thanks, Harold.
Wow.
What is your question?
Good morning. Say, I tuned in a little bit late, and maybe you addressed this a little earlier. I have a question about possibly voles. In my backyard, about 10 days ago, three piles of dirt appeared, small piles of dirt. I've lived in this house for 40 years and never had this in the backyard before. It's not a particularly lush area. But I assume these were voles that were digging dirt up, but there are no tracks that I can see at all. And I'm wondering what that is, if that is a vole, number one, and number two, should I just clear it off or try to, is there a cavern underneath that I should push this dirt back into or what?
Boy, that is a good question. Voles with a V usually create kind of these trails that they make. They're surface runways, they're called. And that's the easiest way to identify voles. And voles are like little tiny mice with short tails.
Yeah.
They live in a lot of grassy area, and particularly around trees and shrubs. They will gnaw on the bark of trees. And they like to be protected because they are a fine dining treat for our predatory birds. Moles, on the other hand, are going to be pushing up soil and creating these kind of runways also, but the soil's pushed up along it. So they're bigger animals. They're down under the soil versus the moles, which are the voles, which are just at the surface. So they could be moles. They could also be gophers, as somebody mentioned. If they're piles of soil with a hole, that I would be more likely to say those are gophers. Oddly enough, Goldie Gopher is our mascot for the University of Minnesota, and it's one of the most destructive agricultural pests that we have.
I did not know that.
But yeah, I'm going to guess that they're gophers that are in there. And as far as getting rid of them, you can push that soil back down. We don't usually recommend baits because sometimes they can cause more problems, such as pets eating them or other non-targeted animals. So try to see if you can spot the critter and then go to the DNR webpage. They have a lot of good information on managing wildlife, like gophers and badgers and voles. And we do have a good webpage on vole damage in lawns, though, that you could see on extension.umn.edu.
Yes. All right. Thanks, Harold. I want to alert Carol and Leon. We're going to grab your calls when we come back after the forecast. So hang in there, grab some coffee or something. A quick text. Can I cut a birch branch, and would it help to seal it with a sealer at this time of the year?
You can trim that branch off. You'll see some weeping of sap. That's normal. You do not need to treat it with a wound paint or anything like that. So we just want those plants to heal naturally. And we don't recommend that the painting it anymore.
One more before
special cases.
One more. How do I kill a really old climbing rose? I've cut it back to the ground, but it keeps sending up shoots, Dexter said.
Yeah. Well, the best thing is dig it out if you can. I would start with that. And then if you still see some of the suckers coming up, you could either pull those out. They should pull out relatively easily once you get the main plant out.
Okay. More phone calls and more text straight ahead here. About another half hour of the show to go on News Talk 830 WCCO. Stay with us. Garden Show here on CCO every Saturday in the 8 o'clock hour. This morning from the U of M, Julie Weisenhorn is answering all of those questions. And Julie, as usual, we have many, both by phone and by text. In a little bit, I want to ask you about what's going on at the Arboretum, too, like we always like to do. But we promise folks who are on the phone to get to them. Carol is next up here, calling in from Coon Rapids. Carol, thank you for your patience. What is your question, please?
Good morning. I'm in the planning process of planting 30 acres of native pollinators in central Minnesota. The company that will be doing the planting wants to spray with glyphosate to control the weeds. I said no. What are other non-toxic weed control that you would recommend?
Oh, boy, we could have a whole show on this, Carol. Glyphosate is a non-selective herbicide. In other words, it kills all plants, grasses as well as broadleaf. It is commonly used to clear vegetation along with especially invasive species. And it is not a product that people have strong feelings about it. But it is something that is necessary for removing a lot of, especially in the amount that you're talking about. So, to kill plants, you have to use an herbicide. And there are not a lot of choices. Even if you burn that area, you're still maybe not going to get rid of all the weeds. And the weed control is one of the biggest things when you're establishing a prairie area, especially in that size. Weed control is really important. And so you want to get rid of those weeds as soon as you can. And there's probably Canada thistle and a lot of other really difficult weeds that are growing in those spaces. So I have to defer to the experts in this respect and this company. And this would probably be their common practice that they do. Remember that this is an herbicide. It does not harm animals, and it's designed to kill plants. And it's a very short-lived herbicide, so plants are treated with it, they take it up and transport it throughout their roots and stems and leaves and kill those plants down. So, like I said, we could have a whole show on this, or probably a couple of shows. I would say just have a discussion with your vendor and talk to them about other options. And if they have any other options, I'm sure they'd be happy to discuss that with you.
All right, very good. 651-461-9226 for your calls or text messages. Getting a lot of text messages. Evidently, well, at least according to our listeners, it sounds like these people know what they're talking about. Pocket gophers. Not the other kind, what do they call them? They're striped, 13-striped ground squirrels.
13-line ground squirrels.
Yeah, it's the pocket gopher seems to be the verdict here.
There you go.
Leon is calling in this morning from, I believe, Shakopee. Leon, thank you for waiting. What is your question, please?
I didn't have a question. You addressed pretty well the mounds of dirt, and the difference between a gopher and a badger is a badger's much larger animal. You're not going to see too many badgers digging up yards. but the gophers, if you get to the mound before you do anything with it, look about in the middle of the mound, you'll see kind of a dimple. That's the last place that the gopher pushed the dirt out of. I used to trap them when I was a kid. I got 3 cents for a pair of ears. And but if you want to push the dirt back down, go where that little dimple is and dig it out. Then you'll find the tunnel that the gopher pushed the dirt out of.
Interesting.
Oh,
Leah.
Cool.
All right, thanks, Leah. As you know, we have the smartest listeners in the world.
Excellent. Thank you for your advice.
This texter, says, I planted pink Veronicas next to Carl Forrester's 2 years ago alongside of our driveway. They are no longer coming up. Could they have been ruined by the driveway snow, or any thoughts from you would be helpful?
Oh, sometimes I find Veronicas are a little short-lived. They're not quite as tough a plant, and driveway areas are really tough locations for plants. They get a lot of, can have sand that your wheels pick up, your tires pick up. They can have salt if you put salt down, de-icing salt. And de-icing salt can harm plants along the edges of your driveway. Even as careful as you are, some of it gets there, and we do carry it from streets into our driveways. So it could be that the soil has become salty there. Also, it could be that the plant just isn't that hardy, and it's just a tough spot. I would try planting them more into a garden bed and maybe not along the driveway.
Okay. Can I trim and thin out my maple trees now or wait for it to leaf out? I'm concerned about the sap running out.
Well, the sap running is not going to harm the plant, and so you can go ahead and do that trimming now.
Okay. Another texter, Julie, says, do you trim shrub roses? If so, when and how do you do it?
Well, right now, if you look at your shrub roses, you may see some green stems with fat buds on them that may have started to open even. You may see some brown stems. Also, the brown stems are dead. So that's called winter dieback. So when you do cut those back, you want to prune down to a healthy bud. And into that green tissue, just maybe about a quarter of an inch or so. Don't want to leave a stump. You want to get down just above a bud. And so you could do that now. I'd maybe just wait till we get past this snowfall and do it maybe next week sometime or the week after.
Okay. Let's take another phone call this morning, Julie. Ken calling in from Blaine this morning. Ken, what is your question for Julie?
Yes, I was wondering you estimate the magnolias are going to be blooming at the arboretum, and how many varieties do you have there? And also, I'm interested in does your magnolias at the arboretum get the scale, magnolia scale? I've lost all my magnolia trees and shrubs due to that problem.
Oh yeah. I am not the magnolia person to ask. I'm going to take a wild stab at how many types we have. I'm going to say we probably have a dozen, 12 to 15 maybe, different kinds of magnolia. Some are very large and have been around for a long time. Others are quite small and are newer plantings. So as far as when they bloom, I'm going to, boy, this year has been tough to predict, I'll tell you that. Sometimes I think they're going to bloom tomorrow, but now with the weather coming, hopefully they're holding off. I would say they usually bloom in April, so that would be a pretty good time to make a trip out here. One thing you could do to find out what types of magnolias we have is use a tool that we have on the Arboretum site called the Plant Finder. You can click on that. It's under our Gardens and Grounds tab and search for plants. So you can type in magnolia, and it will show you all the magnolias on the property and also give you the names of the magnolias. It's a really awesome tool. It helps us to really categorize and show people where to find plants so they can see them growing in real life in Minnesota. This is all done through our curatorial department and really is a wonderful, wonderful tool for people to see these plants in living color. As far as magnolia scale, yes, I believe we have had magnolia scale. It's a really, really detrimental pest on magnolias, and I sympathize with you that you've lost your magnolias to this. It's a very difficult insect to manage, and systemic treatment is one of the few things that you can do for magnolia scale. We have a web page on it on our extension site. A systemic is taken up through the soil, through the roots of the trees, and transported throughout the plant, and so that when the scale sucks the juices of the plant, it also absorbs and consumes that pesticide. So that's one of the only things you can do for that pest. So it's unfortunate. But yeah, I sympathize with you on that.
Julie, I want to ask you in a moment about what's going on at the Arboretum. Let's grab a phone call, though. Reed has been phoning in from Wayzata this morning. Reed, thank you. What is your question for Julie?
Question about asparagus. It's year three, and we have yet to harvest a single spear of asparagus. We get nice big, what do you call them, fronds, the big green. Just did a soil test from the university, good pH, good organic matter, and it seems like high concentration of everything you need for plant growth. My fear is that perhaps I didn't plant them deep enough. And so if that's the case, is it possible to transplant three-year-old asparagus plants?
Oh, man, this is a tough question. three-year-old asparagus plants that are not shooting up spears. I'm curious that they're not shooting up spears because the spears are what produces the fronds. So you're getting good fronds, but you should be getting spears before fronds. So that's kind of interesting to me. As far as being able to transplant them, I suppose you could try. You would have to really lift. I would prepare the place that you want to transplant them to, and then lift them with a lot of soil around those roots. Don't disturb the roots as much as possible and put them right into the new location. Unfortunately, though, I mean, it sounds like your soil test came back fine. So maybe it's a matter of fertilization of asparagus and maybe looking at treating those. We have a webpage called A to Z, Vegetables A to Z, and asparagus is on that list. So I would recommend taking a look at that and reading the asparagus is on that list. So I would recommend taking a look at that. And reading the asparagus page and seeing about the fertility for asparagus, and then also what to do if you're having issues with it. So take a look at that. It's under Vegetables A to Z on our vegetables page at extension.umn.edu, Yard and Garden.
Very good. Tell you what, Julie, when we come back, let's talk just briefly about what's going on at the Arboretum like we always like to do. So we'll take this break, be back in just a moment here on News Talk 830 WCCO. Mm-hmm. Good morning. Welcome back to our Smart Garden Show here every Saturday in the 8 o'clock hour. Julie Weisenhorn from the U of M, who is ensconced at the Arboretum right now at her office. Julie, I know we want to talk briefly about the Arboretum, but you have a little walk back from the asparagus question.
Yeah, so I was just reading through our asparagus page. Asparagus is a big feeder, so it definitely would benefit from fertilization. So take a look at the page. It has good advice on what kind of fertilizer to use and how much to apply.
All right. And what is going on at the Arboretum, that great place, this week and this season?
Oh, my goodness. Well, things are starting to open up. I saw a little bit forsythia blooming. We have our Maple Fest that is starting on March 23rd. And so that is today. So that's going on. There's a full worm moon hike. I've never heard of a full worm moon. This is on Monday night from 7:30 to 10:30. It's coming up. This is a hike at night here at the Arboretum. The Bud Break, if you are a runner, you can register now. That is on May 5th, so register now. We have our plant sale that will be the Friday and Saturday of Mother's Day weekend, so look for that. You will need to get a reservation to come to the Arboretum, especially for some of these special events. There's special registration for that, too. So visit us at arb.umn.edu.
You won't regret it. Great place.
Super fun.
Texter says this, Julie, I'm planning on making seed balls with a group of kids. Do you have any recommendation for the type of seeds to use?
So I think that for seed balls, I would use seeds that will germinate really easily. So some of the, with seed balls, for people who don't know, are balls that are created with, made of seed, and you can plant the ball and it will grow. So I would choose things that have a short germination period, maybe all about the same. You could read that on the back of the seed packet. And then plants that can grow well together. So it might be an array of different annual flowers would be great. Things like bachelor buttons, calendula. And I would do a variety of different kinds of seeds. Calendulas, for example, have very interesting C-shaped big seeds, whereas bachelor buttons have very tiny seeds. So take a look at some of those. Also things like marigolds, and those would make a really nice garden space.
Okay. This listener, Julie, says, I have a group of 25-foot pine trees that were planted too close together. Lower branches appear dead. Now, if I thin them out, do you think the tree branches that appear dead will fill in?
Oh, the branches that look dead are probably dead. They've probably been shaded so much from the other trees that they have not had enough sun. You can test a branch by bending it and seeing if it breaks. You can also scratch the surface of the bark with your fingernail or a little tool and see that if it's green underneath, and that will tell you if the branch is alive or not. It takes a very long time for an evergreen branch to produce more needles or more foliage. So just bear that in mind. Planting them too close together is probably the biggest problem.
Okay. This listener overseeded last fall, said my normal first application of fertilizer has grass killer in it. Do I need to forego this application so the new grass isn't damaged?
It sounds like they may be putting down something with if you have a pre-emergent in your fertilizer, you cannot seed now.
Right.
With grass seed, because it will prevent that grass seed from growing. That would be my caution. And usually with crabgrass, because they're annual weeds, we are trying to prevent those annual seeds from germinating, and usually it's a pre-emergent. So read the packaging. It should tell you how soon you can seed.
Okay. This listener said, we had very dry summers last 3 years. Our yard at the lake is devoid of grass in some places. We received 3 inches of snow yesterday. Do you think it would be okay to spread grass seed over that snow? A lot of people think that. What do you think?
Yeah, well, we're going to get more snow now. I think you could do that. I actually did that with my bee lawn mix in a certain part of my yard, and I kind of kicked the snow over the seed. I put the seed down, sprinkled it down, and then I just kind of kicked it around so that it got covered up a little bit. You could try doing that.
Okay. This listener said via text, I had a soil test done recommending the best fertilizer for my soil as 30-0-20. Now, how does this translate into the fertilizer you buy at the garden stores, they want to know?
So the most important number in that equation is 30. That's 30% nitrogen. Nitrogen is a mobile nutrient. It needs to be replenished. So you want to try to match that 30 as close as you can when you go to the garden center and look at different fertilizers. As far as the zero, that would be your phosphorus, meaning that your test proved that you have plenty of phosphorus, but it's very difficult to get exactly a 30-0-20, for example. So you want to go as close as you can to the nitrogen, and then you kind of have to compromise on the other two numbers, the phosphorus and the potassium.
Okay. This listener says, I have my canister of Belon seeds, and I'm wondering if I should plant them today before the snow or wait until later in the spring.
I would put them down today. That's a great idea.
Yeah. Another one. We're doing a lightning round here, as you can tell. listener wants to know, can I use corn gluten meal on my asparagus bed for weed control? If I can, how much do I use and when is the best time?
So corn gluten meal is a special type of organic pre-emergent herbicide. And it has to be put down at a certain time, and it usually takes a number of years to actually work. So it's not going to really help a lot the first year that you put it down. For an asparagus bed, I would probably get in there and start pulling weeds. And as you start to see them come up, you can put a pre-emergent down. That is going to be, that's going to activate faster than the corn gluten meal. Corn gluten meal needs time to break down, and it only can be applied at certain temperatures to be effective. It's a rather complicated pre-emergent type of fertilizer or herbicide. And so I would actually purchase a pre-emergent herbicide and put that down.
A listener sent in this comment. It's not a question. It says, agricultural strength vinegar is a good non-selective organic weed killer. You want to comment on that?
I don't know if it's technically organic, labeled as organic. It is also an herbicide. It requires PPE because the fumes from that is very strong. The vinegar we have in our kitchen cupboards is about a 5% acetic acid, and agricultural or horticultural vinegar is about 20%. So the fumes can be very harsh on your nose and your eyes.
Oh, yeah.
And so you still need to use it. You still need to use it like you use any other type of herbicide. It is also going to just kill the plants on the plant parts above the soil. It is not going to kill the roots. So it would be something that might be applicable to annual weeds like a crabgrass, but do take precautions with it. Read the label, wear the PPE, and use it as directed. Do not think because it's vinegar, it's any safer than anything else out there.
Okay. Julie, less than 2 minutes to go in the show. Texter says, we have some apple trees that were damaged last summer that bent over to a 45-degree angle. We took off all the fruit and used stakes to try to pull it back. Now, these trees are 3 years old. Do you think they will ever be strong enough to stand by themselves, or do we need to replace them?
Well, I think that I hope you've been pruning them because that can help to take some of the weight off. You can head back some of those branches. Also, take off those stakes and allow the branches to move freely. That helps to build up the cambium layer and the strength of the branches. I'd give them a shot. I mean, that's an investment on apple trees, and they'll get stronger.
Okay. The time is down to a minute here. Hi, Julie. Texture says, I have some Zone 4 hardy hibiscus that are part of the native prairie landscape. Unfortunately, they were accidentally cut to the ground last year. Will they grow back? They are one-year seasoned.
I think they will grow back. In fact, I think cutting them back is a common practice.
Okay. Julie, again, let's give that University of Minnesota website as we head out of here. And I thank you for all your fun help as usual. tell us about that website.
extension.umn.edu. Go to Yard and Garden and sign up for our Yard and Garden news so that you'll get an alert in your email box when we have new information on it.
Well, enjoy the Arboretum, you lucky person who offices there. Right? That's great. And Julie, we'll talk soon, but have a great week, will you?
Thanks, Denny. You too.
All right. Julie Wisenhorn from the University of Minnesota. Now get those home improvement questions ready. Andy Lindis will be answering those very things. And of course, we'll be talking about, I have a feeling somebody's going to ask, can heavy snow be bad for my roof? I bet we'll get a question about that. Whatever your home improvement question is, we'll be ready for them next hour. Here on News Talk 830 WCCO, where the temperature reading in the Twin Cities right now, 21 degrees. And a good Saturday morning to you. This morning I am joined from the University of Minnesota, Julie Wisenhorn. Julie, good morning.
Yeah, hey, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well and I don't usually get excited about a lot of snow when I have to drive. But when I've looked at my shrubs and my lawn and the trees and all the conversations you and I and our colleagues have had, this is a great sign for, and it looks like a pretty good moisture content to this stuff, too.
Yeah, I've definitely seen benefits already just looking out my window here at the foodscape. I'm coming to you from the Arboretum today and already seeing greening up and moisture in the soil. And that's so important right now.
Oh, it really is. So it's a blessing. It really is. And we're expecting, as I mentioned, as I heard Al just say, it goes anywhere from 3 to 10 inches, basically, is what the folks are saying. But we'll keep our eyes on that. Now, if you have any kind of a lawn or garden question for Julie, and you know, you're a regular listener of the show, you know how busy we get. So let's hear from you earlier, sooner rather than later. You can call in, you can text in, which is easier. 651-461-9226. Boom, all of a sudden we're getting texts as we speak here. Let's grab this first one. Texter says, I bought a wandering dew plant last week mostly because I thought the name was cool. how do I care for it? Thanks. That comes from Christopher in Mound. Hi, Julie. What do you think? Wandering dew, is that for real?
Well, I've never heard it called that before, but I know Chris, and it's a really easy plant to care for. It's actually, the genus is Tradescantia, and it's a very prolific vining plant. It usually, there's a variety of different colored leaves, and a lot of the common ones I've seen have been like a purpley color, or maybe a burgundy color, and these just need to be kind of in a medium light. They actually grow down, I've seen them growing in Florida as ground covers, and so they don't need a lot of light. So that's a great feature of a house plant, because light is one of our biggest challenges in our homes for plants.
Absolutely, and I'm thinking maybe the name of that plant is to honor the Coen brothers. You know, the dude. Possibly, I don't know. Hey, let's grab a phone call. From Mark. Mark's calling in this morning from Shoreview. Hi, Mark. What is your question for Julie?
Yes, good morning. About a Carl Forster plant. I went to cut them down a week ago, and I put my hand around one of them and lifted, and the whole plant just lifted out from the ground, and I'm in the hole where it was. I couldn't even see any roots or, you know, the bottoms of the stalks. And it was just one plant out of five that just happened to. I'm wondering what could have happened and how to prevent it.
So it has no more roots left.
That I could see, right? I didn't dig in, but okay. Nothing that I could see at soil level.
Okay. So if a plant has lost its roots, that means that something has eaten those roots and the plant is essentially dead at that point. Whether it was, what kind of critter it was, it could have been grubs, it could have been voles. Living down underneath that plant. They do like to spend the winter in kind of grassy areas. Carl Forster's a great plant, and you shouldn't have any trouble replacing that plant. But there's not much to do about changing that, except for maybe look in the soil as it warms up and see if you do have grubs. Pay attention to see if you have any small animals that are living in those plants as well. And check the other plants for sure. So in this case, I think I would just replant it and kind of chalk it up to experience. But there's nothing to do to prevent that.
Okay. for just joining us. Julie Weisenhorn from the U of M is answering those lawn and garden questions on our Smart Garden Show today. 651-461-9226. Here is another one, Julie. Texter says, my son has a wide stream on his property close to his house. His yard has large piles of dirt like an animal has been digging. What animal do you think that could be, and how does he remedy this?
Large piles of dirt that an animal has been digging. Boy, my first thought is woodchucks. Mm. They're big. They do some digging. But that, boy, I don't know. That would be a great question for a wildlife specialist. And maybe contact the DNR. They have excellent wildlife specialists who can maybe help you with identifying that animal. I'm hoping this is just out of curiosity and it hasn't been doing any damage in the area.
Because usually, Julie, correct me if I'm wrong, but moles usually kind of have the raising of the soil or sod.
Yeah, you know, but not big really piles.
Of dirt. Yeah.
Yeah, big piles to me means they've been kicking up and really burrowing in. So I would think it's a larger animal than a mole.
Well, as you know, we have some of the smartest listeners around, and I would bet,
yeah.
I will
anybody
wager
know?
That we're going to have, we'll have some comments on some people who, some listeners who know what that critter might be. All right. Another one. My tulips are up. This is the first year I've ever planted tulip bulbs. And Texter says, and now we're supposed to get 11 inches of snow. Do I cover them?
No, at this point, there's not much to do about that. The snow will actually help insulate those tulips. What you're mostly concerned is if the temperature drops really low, like sub-zero, and the tulips are not covered up. So that snow is actually insulating them. They'll be fine. They might see a little bit of damage on the tips of the leaves, but this is not covered up. So that snow is actually insulating them. They'll be fine. They might see a little bit of damage on the tips of the leaves. But this snow is going to melt really fast. It's going to be in the 40s, you know, a couple of days after the snowfall.
I'm looking at the forecast, and unlike a lot of storms after, you know, so many times, Julie, as you know, after we get snow, it turns cold, usually.
Right, right.
Often. Not, you're right on the money, because I think Monday we'll get up to near 40. Let's see, I'm just glancing at this. High 30 Wednesday.
Yeah, 38
Thursday.
Temperatures are pretty low.
Friday, 45 the high. So, yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of melting going on. 21 is our current temp. All right. Garden, lawn or garden question. 651-461-9226. Let's grab another one. Hi, gang. This one says, good morning. Are banana peels bad for composting? I've heard different views. What's yours?
I don't know of anything bad about banana peels in your composting. If you're really anxious to get them to break down quicker, you could like cut them into thirds so that they're smaller pieces they could break down. But I don't think they're going to cause any issues in your compost.
As you know, Julie, we get a lot of questions, it seems like pretty often, about coffee grounds for use in gardening. What do you and your other experts say about that?
Well, I think the one thing about coffee grounds is that they add a lot of lightness to soil. So if you have very compacted soil, they can help to break that down. They're great to throw in compost. No problems there. To grow something directly in coffee grounds would not be a good idea because they don't provide any kind of nutrients to the plant. But they do lighten the soil and they make it kind of friable or friable. And so that's so that is a good addition to your compost. We have a nice web page, actually, that my friend Ann Sawyer, who used to work for Extension, wrote. It is called Coffee Grounds, Eggshells, and Epsom Salts in the Home Garden. So these are this is a great web page. It's under our soil web page on Yard and Garden. So extension.umn.edu. Go to Yard and Garden and visit Managing Soil and Nutrients in Yards and Gardens. And you will find the link to that article. So if you've wondered about those ingredients in your home garden, this is a great place to go.
I'm glad you mentioned it. We always like to do that on this show. Extension.umn.edu. What a great resource. Julie, hang on. We're going to grab a phone call from Deb when we come back and answer more text questions as well. This is our Smart Garden Show. You have a lawn or garden question, here's the number to either call in or text in. 651-461-9226. From News Talk 830, this is WCCO. And good Saturday morning to you. Welcome back to this portion of our Smart Garden Show. Julie Weisenhorn from the U of M answering those lawn and garden questions this morning. You tell me, Julie, you're right there at the Arboretum.
I am at the Arboretum today, which is why I probably sound a little different. But yeah, so I am here today because right after this radio show, I am teaching a class called Jumpstart Your Garden.
Mm.
And I need to be across the street at the Bee Center.
So you're nearby.
Yes.
We'll talk about the Arboretum in just a matter of minutes. We always like to do that. But we have a ton of listener questions by phone and by text. Let's grab the first one. Deb calling in from Chanhassen this morning. Hi, Deb. What's your question for Julie?
Good morning. We took down some evergreen trees last fall. And, of course, the lawn underneath is non-existent. What do we do? We want to put grass there. Number one, what type of grass, and how do we need to prep the soil?
Okay. So you've taken down some evergreen trees, so now you have full sun, and the soil has been – have you taken out the stumps? Deb, did you take out the stumps of your trees?
Yes. There are some trees there, so it's not full sun. It's more of a dappled sun a little bit.
Okay. All right. So you've taken out the stumps, so now you want to decide on the best grass species for that area. So you want to look at the amount of light that you have. So you said you have dappled light, so that's great. And you probably have pretty dry conditions right there. So you're going to want to take out any kind of, if there's any sort of growth, like grass growing or weeds or anything, you want to take those out in the area that you're going to reseed. And then get that seed down. You could put it down any time and get a jump on that. We call it frost seeding. If John were here, he would really promote this. This is a great way to get a start on your grasses, on your lawns for the gardening season. And the cold, damp weather is going to help to germinate, help those seeds to germinate. So they will start to fill in. And then you want to just be sure that you keep those plants watered. So you don't want those little grass seedlings to dry out. So keep them watered. And it should grow in really nicely. It's good that you're thinking about this right now. Now, if you did not get all of the roots out, which is can be difficult to do, particularly if they're really large trees, you may see some mushrooms coming up here and there, and those are growing out of the roots that are left in the ground that are decomposing. So you just knock them down. There's nothing to treat with, nothing to do about it. It's just going to happen. Just knock those down, pick them up, throw them in your compost, and just kind of keep caring for that area while that grass fills in.
All right, we're getting responses like we figured we would on the piles of dirt, soil.
Oh, good. Awesome.
Some folks say gophers. Some folks say badgers. Sounds like a football game between Wisconsin and Minnesota.
But, the little brown jug.
Yeah, exactly. Let's grab another phone call. Harold is calling in from Roseau, Minnesota this morning. Thanks, Harold.
Wow.
What is your question?
Good morning. Say, I tuned in a little bit late, and maybe you addressed this a little earlier. I have a question about possibly voles. In my backyard, about 10 days ago, three piles of dirt appeared, small piles of dirt. I've lived in this house for 40 years and never had this in the backyard before. It's not a particularly lush area. But I assume these were voles that were digging dirt up, but there are no tracks that I can see at all. And I'm wondering what that is, if that is a vole, number one, and number two, should I just clear it off or try to, is there a cavern underneath that I should push this dirt back into or what?
Boy, that is a good question. Voles with a V usually create kind of these trails that they make. They're surface runways, they're called. And that's the easiest way to identify voles. And voles are like little tiny mice with short tails.
Yeah.
They live in a lot of grassy area. And particularly around trees and shrubs, they will gnaw on the bark of trees. And they like to be protected because they are a fine dining treat for our predatory birds. Moles, on the other hand, are going to be pushing up soil and creating these kind of runways also, but the soil's pushed up along it. So they're bigger animals. They're down under the soil versus the moles, which are just at the surface. So they could be moles. They could also be gophers, as somebody mentioned. If they're piles of soil with a hole, that I would be more likely to say those are gophers. Oddly enough, Goldie Gopher is our mascot for the University of Minnesota, and it's one of the most destructive agricultural pests that we have.
I did not know that.
But yeah, I'm going to guess that they're gophers that are in there. And as far as getting rid of them, you can push that soil back down. We don't usually recommend baits because sometimes they can cause more problems, such as pets eating them or other non-targeted animals. So try to see if you can spot the critter and then go to the DNR webpage. They have a lot of good information on managing wildlife, like gophers and badgers and voles. And we do have a good webpage on vole damage in lawns, though, that you could see on extension.umn.edu.
Yes. All right. Thanks, Harold. I want to alert Carol and Leon. We're going to grab your calls when we come back after the forecast. So hang in there, grab some coffee or something. A quick text. Can I cut a birch branch, and would it help to seal it with a sealer at this time of the year?
You can trim that branch off. You'll see some weeping of sap. That's normal. You do not need to treat it with a wound paint or anything like that. So we just want those plants to heal naturally, and we don't recommend that the painting it anymore.
One more before
special cases.
One more. How do I kill a really old climbing rose? I've cut it back to the ground, but it keeps sending up shoots, Dexter said.
Yeah. Well, the best thing is dig it out if you can. I would start with that. And then if you still see some of the suckers coming up, you could either pull those out. They should pull out relatively easily once you get the main plant out.
Okay. More phone calls and more text straight ahead here. About another half hour of the show to go on News Talk 830 WCCO. Stay with us. Garden Show here on CCO every Saturday in the 8 o'clock hour. This morning from the U of M, Julie Weisenhorn is answering all of those questions. And Julie, as usual, we have many, both by phone and by text. In a little bit, I want to ask you about what's going on at the Arboretum, too, like we always like to do. But we promise folks who are on the phone to get to them. Carol is next up here, calling in from Coon Rapids. Carol, thank you for your patience. What is your question, please?
Good morning. I'm in the planning process of planting 30 acres of native pollinators in central Minnesota. The company that will be doing the planting wants to spray with glyphosate to control the weeds. I said no. What are other non-toxic weed control that you would recommend?
Oh, boy, we could have a whole show on this, Carol. Glyphosate is a non-selective herbicide. In other words, it kills all plants, grasses as well as broadleaf. It is commonly used to clear vegetation along with especially invasive species. And it is not a product that people have strong feelings about it. But it is something that is necessary for removing a lot of, especially in the amount that you're talking about. So, to kill plants, you have to use an herbicide. And there are not a lot of choices. Even if you burn that area, you're still maybe not going to get rid of all the weeds. And the weed control is one of the biggest things when you're establishing a prairie area, especially in that size. Weed control is really important. And so you want to get rid of those weeds as soon as you can. And there's probably Canada thistle and a lot of other really difficult weeds that are growing in those spaces. So I have to defer to the experts in this respect and this company. And this would probably be their common practice that they do. Remember that this is an herbicide. It does not harm animals, and it's designed to kill plants. And it's a very short-lived herbicide, so it's treated. Plants are treated with it. They take it up and transport it throughout their roots and stems and leaves and kill those plants down. So, like I said, we could have a whole show on this, or probably a couple of shows. I would say just have a discussion with your vendor and talk to them about other options. And if they have any other options, I'm sure they'd be happy to discuss that with you.
All right, very good. 651-461-9226 for your calls or text messages. Getting a lot of text messages. Evidently, well, at least according to our listeners, it sounds like these people know what they're talking about. Pocket gophers.
Gophers.
Not the other kind, what do they call them? They're striped, 13-striped ground squirrels.
13-line ground squirrels.
Yeah, it's the pocket gopher seems to be the verdict here.
There you go.
Leon is calling in this morning from, I believe, Shakopee. Leon, thank you for waiting. What is your question, please?
I didn't have a question. You addressed pretty well the mounds of dirt, and the difference between a gopher and a badger is a badger's much larger animal. You're not going to see too many badgers digging up yards. but the gophers, if you get to the mound before you do anything with it, look about in the middle of the mound, you'll see kind of a dimple. That's the last place that the gopher pushed the dirt out of. I used to trap them when I was a kid. I got 3 cents for a pair of ears. And but if you want to push the dirt back down, go where that little dimple is and dig it out. Then you'll find the tunnel that the gopher pushed the dirt out of.
Interesting.
Oh,
Leah,
cool.
All right, thanks, Leah. As you know, we have the smartest listeners in the world.
Excellent. Thank you for your advice.
This listener, this texter, says, I planted pink Veronicas next to Carl Forrester's 2 years ago alongside of our driveway. They are no longer coming up. Could they have been ruined by the driveway snow, or any thoughts from you would be helpful?
Oh, sometimes I find Veronicas are a little short-lived. They're not quite as tough a plant, and driveway areas are really tough locations for plants. They get a lot of, can have sand that your wheels pick up, your tires pick up. They can have salt if you put salt down, de-icing salt. And de-icing salt can harm plants along the edges of your driveway. Even as careful as you are, some of it gets there. And we do carry it from streets into our driveways. So it could be that the soil has become salty there. Also, it could be that the plant just isn't that hardy and it's just a tough spot. I would try planting them more into a garden bed and maybe not along the driveway.
Okay. Can I trim and thin out my maple trees now or wait for it to leaf out? I'm concerned about the sap running out.
Well, the sap running is not going to harm the plant, and so you can go ahead and do that trimming now.
Okay. Another texter, Julie, says, do you trim shrub roses? If so, when and how do you do it?
Well, right now, if you look at your shrub roses, you may see some green stems with fat buds on them that may have started to open even. You may see some brown stems also. The brown stems are dead. So that's called winter dieback. So when you do cut those back, you want to prune down to a healthy bud and into that green tissue, just maybe about a quarter of an inch or so. Don't want to leave a stump. You want to get down just above a bud. And so you could do that now. I'd maybe just wait till we get past this snowfall and do it maybe next week sometime or the week after.
Okay. Let's take another phone call this morning, Julie. Ken calling in from Blaine this morning. Ken, what is your question for Julie?
Yes, I was wondering when you estimate the magnolias are going to be blooming at the arboretum and how many varieties do you have there? And Also, I'm interested in, does your magnolias at the arboretum get the scale, magnolia scale? I've lost all my magnolia trees and shrubs due to that problem.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I am not the magnolia person to ask. I'm going to take a wild stab at how many types we have. I'm going to say we probably have a dozen, 12 to 15 maybe, different kinds of magnolia. Some are very large and have been around for a long time. Others are quite small and are newer plantings. So as far as when they bloom, I'm going to, this year has been tough to predict, I'll tell you that. Sometimes I think they're going to bloom tomorrow, but now with the weather coming, hopefully they're holding off. I would say they usually bloom in April, so that would be a pretty good time to make a trip out here. One thing you could do to find out what types of magnolias we have is use a tool that we have on the Arboretum site called the Plant Finder. You can click on that. It's under our Gardens and Grounds tab and search for plants. So you can type in magnolia and it will show you all the magnolias on the property and also give you the names of the magnolias. It's a really awesome tool. It helps us to really categorize and show people where to find plants so they could see them growing in real life in Minnesota. This is all done through our curatorial department and really is a wonderful, wonderful tool for people to see these plants in living color. As far as magnolia scale, yes, I believe we have had magnolia scale. It's a really, really detrimental pest on magnolias, and I sympathize with you that you've lost your magnolias to this. It's a very difficult insect to manage, and systemic treatment is one of the few things that you can do for magnolia scale. We have a web page on it on our extension site. A systemic is taken up through the soil, through the roots of the trees, and transported throughout the plant, and so that when the scale sucks the juices of the plant, it also absorbs and consumes that pesticide. So that's one of the only things you can do for that pest. So it's unfortunate. But yeah, I sympathize with you on that.
Julie, I want to ask you in a moment about what's going on at the Arboretum. Let's grab a phone call, though. Reed has been phoning in from Wayzata this morning. Reed, thank you. What is your question for Julie?
Question about asparagus. It's year three, and we have yet to harvest a single spear of asparagus. We get nice big, what do you call them, fronds, the big green. Just did a soil test from the university, good pH, good organic matter, and it seems like high concentration of everything you need for plant growth. My fear is that perhaps I didn't plant them deep enough. And so if that's the case, is it possible to transplant three-year-old asparagus plants?
Oh, man, this is a tough question. three-year-old asparagus plants that are not shooting up spears. I'm curious that they're not shooting up spears because the spears are what produces the fronds. So you're getting good fronds, but you should be getting spears before fronds. So that's kind of interesting to me. As far as being able to transplant them, I suppose you could try. You would have to really lift. I would prepare the place that you want to transplant them to, and then lift them with a lot of soil around those roots. Don't disturb the roots as much as possible and put them right into the new location. Unfortunately, though, I mean, it sounds like your soil test came back fine. So maybe it's a matter of fertilization of asparagus and maybe looking at treating those. We have a webpage called A to Z, Vegetables A to Z, and asparagus is on that list. So I would recommend taking a look at that and reading the asparagus is on that list. So I would recommend taking a look at that. And reading the asparagus page and seeing about the fertility for asparagus and then also what to do if you're having issues with it. So take a look at that. It's under Vegetables A to Z on our vegetables page at extension.umn.edu, Yard and Garden.
Very good. Tell you what, Julian, when we come back, let's talk just briefly about what's going on at the Arboretum like we always like to do. So we'll take this break, be back in just a moment here on News Talk 830 WCCO. Good morning. Welcome back to our Smart Garden Show here every Saturday in the 8 o'clock hour. Julie Weisenhorn from the U of M, who is ensconced at the Arboretum right now at her office. Julie, I know we want to talk briefly about the Arboretum, but you have a little walk back from the asparagus question.
Yeah, so I was just reading through our asparagus page. Asparagus is a big feeder, so it definitely would benefit from fertilization. So take a look at the page. It has good advice on how, on what kind of fertilizer to use and how much to apply.
All right. And what is going on at the Arboretum, that great place, this week and this season?
Oh, my goodness.
Season?
Well, things are starting to open up. I saw a little bit forsythia blooming. We have our Maple Fest that is starting on March 23rd. And so that is today. So that's going on. There's a full worm moon hike. I've never heard of a full worm moon. This is on Monday night from 7:30 to 10:30. It's coming up. This is a hike at night here at the Arboretum. The Bud Break, if you are a runner, you can register now. That is on May 5th, so register now. We have our plant sale that will be the Friday and Saturday of Mother's Day weekend, so look for that. You will need to get a reservation to come to the Arboretum, especially for some of these special events. There's special registration for that, too. So visit us at arb.umn.edu.
You won't regret it. Great place.
Super fun.
Texter says this, Julie, I'm planning on making seed balls with a group of kids. Do you have any recommendation for the type of seeds to use?
So I think that for seed balls, I would use seeds that will germinate really easily. So some of the, with seed balls, for people who don't know, are balls that are created with, made of seed, and you can plant the ball and it will grow. So I would choose things that have a short germination period, maybe all about the same. You can read that on the back of the seed packet. And then plants that can grow well together. So it might be an array of different annual flowers would be great. Things like bachelor buttons, calendula. And I would do a variety of different kinds of seeds. Calendulas, for example, have very interesting C-shaped big seeds, whereas bachelor buttons have very tiny seeds. So take a look at some of those. Also things like marigolds, and those would make a really nice garden space.
Okay. This listener, Julie, says, I have a group of 25-foot pine trees that were planted too close together. Lower branches appear dead. Now, if I thin them out, do you think the tree branches that appear dead will fill in?
Oh, the branches that look dead are probably dead. They've probably been shaded so much from the other trees that they have not had enough sun. You can test a branch by bending it and seeing if it breaks. You can also scratch the surface of the bark with your fingernail or a little tool and see that if it's green underneath, and that will tell you if the branch is alive or not. It takes a very long time for an evergreen branch to produce more needles or more foliage. So just bear that in mind. Planting them too close together is probably the biggest problem.
Okay. This listener overseeded last fall, said, my normal first application of fertilizer has grass killer in it. Do I need to forego this application so the new grass isn't damaged?
It sounds like they may be putting down something with a if you have a pre-emergent in your fertilizer, you cannot seed now.
Right.
With grass seed, because it will prevent that grass seed from growing. That would be my caution. And usually with crabgrass, because they're annual weeds, we are trying to prevent those annual seeds from germinating, and usually it's a pre-emergent. So read the packaging. It should tell you how soon you can seed.
Okay. This listener said, we had the very dry summers last 3 years. Our yard at the lake is devoid of grass in some places. We received 3 inches of snow yesterday. Do you think it would be okay to spread grass seed over that snow? A lot of people think that. What do you think?
Yeah, well, we're going to get more snow now. I think you could do that. I actually did that with my bee lawn mix in a certain part of my yard, and I kind of kicked the snow over the seed. I put the seed down, sprinkled it down, and then I just kind of kicked it around so that it got covered up a little bit. You could try doing that.
Okay. This listener said via text, I had a soil test done recommending the best fertilizer for my soil as 30-0-20. Now, how does this translate into the fertilizer you buy at the garden stores, they want to know.
So the most important number in that equation is 30. That's 30% nitrogen. Nitrogen is a mobile nutrient. It needs to be replenished. So you want to try to match that 30 as close as you can when you go to the garden center and look at different fertilizers. As far as the zero, that would be your phosphorus, meaning that your test proved that you have plenty of phosphorus, but it's very difficult to get exactly a 30-0-20, for example. So you want to go as close as you can to the nitrogen, and then you kind of have to compromise on the other two numbers, the phosphorus and the potassium.
Okay. This listener says, I have my canister of bee lawn seeds, and I'm wondering if I should plant them today before the snow or wait until later in the spring.
I would put them down today. That's a great idea.
Yeah. Another one. We're doing a lightning round here, as you can tell. Can I use, this listener wants to know, can I use corn gluten meal on my asparagus bed for weed control? If I can, how much do I use and when is the best time?
So corn gluten meal is a special type of organic pre-emergent herbicide. And it has to be put down at a certain time, and it usually takes a number of years to actually work. So it's not going to really help a lot the first year that you put it down. For an asparagus bed, I would probably get in there and start pulling weeds. And as you start to see them come up, you can put a pre-emergent down. And that is going to be, that's going to activate faster than the corn gluten meal. Corn gluten meal needs time to break down, and it only can be applied at certain temperatures to be effective. It's a rather complicated pre-emergent type of fertilizer or herbicide. And so I would actually purchase a pre-emergent herbicide and put that down.
A listener sent in this comment. It's not a question. It says, agricultural strength vinegar is a good non-selective organic weed killer. You want to comment on that?
I don't know if it's technically organic, labeled as organic. It is also an herbicide. It requires PPE because the fumes from that is very strong. The vinegar we have in our kitchen cupboards is about a 5% acetic acid, and agricultural or horticultural vinegar is about 20%. So the fumes can be very harsh on your nose and your eyes.
Oh yeah.
And so you still need to use it. You still need to use it like you use any other type of herbicide. It is also going to just kill the plants on the plant parts above the soil. It is not going to kill the roots. So it would be something that might be applicable to annual weeds like a crabgrass, but do take precautions with it. Read the label, wear the PPE, and use it as directed. Do not think because it's vinegar, it's any safer than anything else out there.
Okay. Julie, less than 2 minutes to go on the show. Texter says, we have some apple trees that were damaged last summer that bent over to a 45-degree angle. We took off all the fruit and used stakes to try to pull it back. Now, these trees are 3 years old. Do you think they will ever be strong enough to stand by themselves, or do we need to replace them?
Well, I think that I hope you've been pruning them because that can help to take some of the weight off. You can head back some of those branches. Also, take off those stakes and allow the branches to move freely. That helps to build up the cambium layer and the strength of the branches. I'd give them a shot. I mean, that's an investment on apple trees, and they'll get stronger.
Okay. Oh, the time is down to a minute here. Hi, Julie. Texture says, I have some Zone 4 hardy hibiscus that are part of the native prairie landscape. Unfortunately, they were accidentally cut to the ground last year. Will they grow back? They are one-year seasoned.
I think they will grow back. In fact, I think cutting them back is a common practice.
Okay. Julie, again, let's give that University of Minnesota website as we head out of here. And I thank you for all your fun help as usual. But tell us about that website.
extension.umn.edu. Go to Yard and Garden and sign up for our Yard and Garden news so that you'll get an alert in your email box when we have new information on it.
Well, enjoy the Arboretum, you lucky person who offices there. Right? That's great. And Julie, we'll talk soon, but have a great week, will you?
Thanks, Denny. You too.
All right. Julie Wisenhorn from the University of Minnesota. Now get those home improvement questions ready. Andy Lindis will be answering those very things. And, of course, we'll be talking about, I have a feeling somebody's going to ask, can heavy snow be bad for my roof? I bet we'll get a question about that. Whatever your home improvement question is, we'll be ready for them next hour. Here on News Talk 830 WCCO, where the temperature reading in the Twin Cities right now, 21 degrees.